This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us on the web at njrevolutionradio.com. And before I get into my interview today, I want to ask you all a question. How many of you have really thought about just running away from everything, dropping everything in your life, either starting over, getting away from it all? I know if you know me personally, I've probably tried to talk you into buying a commune with me and raising alpacas and blueberries and things like that. But what would this really look like? You know, this is usually why I get shot down, is because everybody's like, we can just raise alpacas for a living. You know, what does it really look like when you run away from it all? So my guest today that I have joining us from France is author Mike Finkel, and he is the writer of a book, Stranger in the Woods, The Extraordinary Tale of the Last True Hermit. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you, Heather. Happy to be here.
So people may know you from your last work that you did, True Story, which was made into a movie with Jonah Hill and James Franco. You know, that was your last story that you did about someone who actually had stolen your identity and was pretending to be you and had killed people. It was a very... yeah, it was a very... But here's the question I wanted to go before I get into this interview. How'd you feel about Jonah Hill playing you in a movie? I know everybody's like, who would you like to play you in a movie?
I mean, okay, so first of all, so my previous book, True Story, was about many things at once, but mostly about a murderer who killed not just four people, but his wife and three children. So pretty much the most horrible murderers you can imagine, who ran off to Mexico and decided to tell everyone his name was Michael Finkel of the New York Times. And I worked for the New York Times and then was fired for messing up an article, making a composite character. So everything was very fraught and complicated. And as you mentioned, the story, which was basically this very uncomfortable cat and mouse game between myself and a guy who was insisting he was innocent, where I was trying to prove he was guilty, and we were sort of trying to out-duel each other. It became a movie, and James Franco played the murderer, Christian Longo, and Jonah Hill played me. And you asked how I felt about that. Well, first of all, I think Jonah Hill is a really talented actor. And so I was honored to be played by him. We don't look like one another, and that didn't bother me at all. I think when you change something from, especially a story like True Story, which the joke of the title is that there is no joke. It's absolutely a true story. And when you fictionalize something and you make a film out of it, lots of things are going to be changed. And so I didn't mind that at all. My answer to you is that I was really, really honored to be played by such a talented actor. His funny roles are funny, but actually it's his serious roles, like Moneyball and Wolf of Wall Street, that I think where he actually shines. And so to answer your question, I was really, you know, happy with that. And, you know, I don't really care if, I don't look like him, but it doesn't bother me.
No, I did think he did a great job in the movie, really, you know, but now meeting you, like, I can see he kind of captured a little bit of you, you know, not, you know, everything, but there's definitely some of how he portrayed himself. I can see that.
It's one of the oddest things in the world to have a, you know, so first of all, the book itself, before we get into the new one, the old book, True Story, was so personal. I remember I lost my job and then a murderer took on my identity and it was about death. It was very horrible. And so then they made this film, and I have actually, when people say, well, what do you think about the movie? Is it good or bad? My only answer is I have no idea. I cannot watch that movie with any sense of like objectivity. In fact, I don't even think I've actually watched it without like sort of like through the slits of my fingers, because it's so bizarre and personal, and like this dude's, you know, it's like so many emotions all at once that there's no objectivity at all. So I have no idea if that movie's any good or not. I just like it is one of the most. It's a weird experience. You know, I'm not a famous person. I'm just a journalist. I like to hide behind my own writing. And so it's just the whole experience of having something that happened to you be portrayed in that sort of manner is, I don't think there's a rule book for how you're supposed to react to that. So it's just really uncomfortable. I always start sweating when I think about that movie and that experience.
Oh, I can imagine. Like I had, you know, I sat down and thought like, well, who would I want to play me in a movie if somebody for some reason made a movie about me? Like, you know, it's a hard thing. Like, okay, well, maybe a younger Melissa McCarthy or, you know, but it's got to be
She's
surreal.
Great.
It's got to be a surreal experience. But I really wanted to get into the new book.
Let's get into it.
In the Woods. You know, I read it in one sitting. It was just from cover, you know, start to finish. It was a really captivating book and really, you know, reached out to me on a lot of levels. Well, I guess first, let's get into what the book is about a little bit. Basically, it's the story of this man, Chris Knight, who walked away. He was 20 years old, walked away from his life and lived in the wilds of Maine for, what was it, how many years? 27 years?
27 years. Yeah, it's basically about a person, like you mentioned, very young, just out of high school, at the age of 20, just decided to quit the world. And I remember when I was 20 years old, there were times where I was, I'm never going to do this again. You know, you get this sort of forceful, you know, radicalism that's in you. And it sounds like you still have some.
just a touch.
I'm happy to hear that. And so this guy had this very unusual idea for how to live at the age of 20. And some of us sit there and fantasize about, oh, I would love to live on a desert island, or, oh, I wish I were a poet or something like this. Well, this guy, he did this. He fulfilled his greatest bizarre desire, which was to walk into the woods alone. And now I think anybody who's paying any attention to modern society probably has that feeling a couple of times a week of just, I'm quitting it all. You know, I got three little kids and I love them dearly, but, you know, one time they're fighting in the back of the car, it's 100 degrees outside, I'm listening to the news, you know, I'm stuck in traffic, I'm late to an appointment, I feel like quitting the world and walking into the woods too. And this guy did it, and did it for 27 years in the wilds of Maine. And the reason why I really like this story is that that sounds like a romantic-ish thing, but when you get down to the nitty-gritty, it was very difficult. He stole food to survive. He bothered a lot of people in this area in Maine. He was extremely intelligent. He read thousands of books. He has beautiful things to say about the world, but he's a very complicated person. And I sort of, as a journalist, I'm not writing fiction. I'm writing true stories. And I really love complicated stories where everybody's reaction to this gentleman, Chris Knight, hermit, seems to be different. And I really like the fact that some people are like, I hate this guy, he stole food. Other people are like, I dream about becoming this person. And nobody's wrong. And sometimes we can get into it. Sometimes your reaction to Chris Knight's actions is more about you than it does about him.
Yeah, I know personally, I liked him from the very beginning, but at one point in time in the book, he starts quoting the Communist Manifesto. I'm like, okay, I love this guy now. To think this guy living in the woods 27 years is, you know, out there reading the Communist Manifesto. I'm like, oh, this guy is awesome.
The reason why I was so enamored of Chris Knight, and I criticize him heavily in the book because I try and, you know, I like in journalism to take an object and look at it from all angles. Not that Chris Knight is an object, but he's a weird person. He was able to quote from the Communist Manifesto. He was able to quote from Shakespeare. He has this, the reason why the project really gripped me was that this guy has love him or hate him, Chris Knight has an amazing mind. He was able to survive and was able to create all these methods for not starving to death, freezing to death, being found, and also was able to read thousands of books and has this, he claimed he didn't have a photographic memory. He just said to me, I just remember everything.
And was able to
as if he was like the Library of Congress in his head, or if he had like, you know, the equivalent of the internet, which he never even saw the internet until he was captured in 2013, was just able to recall and quote things on demand. And I found that, you know, how when you have a conversation with someone and it's just this enlightening and lovely and challenging and different thing that, I mean, obviously you make your living as a conversationalist, it sort of charms you. And this is the type of person, even though he was irascible and didn't really like me, I was sort of charmed by the fact that he didn't like me. He was very fascinating to talk to. I've rarely encountered an intellect like his.
Yeah, definitely. The fact, his intelligence just shone through in the book that, you know, this is not a dumb man. This is a choice he made to live this way. And, you know, it says a lot about him, a lot about society in general.
Right. And, you know, I think one of the questions the book, you know, people hear the story, oh, a man left society for 27 years. A lot of people's reaction is, well, he just must be crazy. He obviously has a mental problem. And I think that's somewhat explored in the book. And I really, the more I spoke to experts and spoke to Chris Knight, you know, there were times all of the psychologists were like, hey, there's really nothing we can diagnose him with except he just wants to be alone. And there have been hermits throughout human history. They're just a thin number. And sometimes I think, you know, it's not Chris Knight who's crazy. It's quite possibly the rest of us.
You know? Yeah. I mean, society in its current state is not something, you know, a lot of people want to, you know, it's not a happy place. You know, a lot of people that I'm interviewing, you know, one person, her slogan of why she's running for office is she wants to unfuck the world. And
so. I mean, it is crazy. It's like, I feel like, yeah, I mean, when I say society is crazy, I actually mean that literally. I feel like we're all, for all of our modern conveniences, I feel like we're so busy. I have friends that I have to like, can we have lunch this week? No, next week, next month, next summer. Like, we can't even find time to have lunch. We have like all, I thought modern conveniences were supposed to reduce our busyness, but, and I'm guilty of it as anybody, just being ridiculously overwhelmed at almost all times. And that's, I mean, when you think about the levels of depression and the number of people taking mood enhancing drugs and just this general malaise that seems to be in the world, then maybe we should all step into the woods. Maybe not for 27 years, but how about a nice long weekend? I think it would do us all some good. I think we need a global timeout.
I like this plan. I definitely like this plan.
I declare a global timeout. The whole world has to go camping for a long weekend. Just a long weekend, not 27 years. God, imagine if we did that. And we all did. I have a feeling like the world would be just a better place.
Yeah, and we'd be out amongst each other and like empathizing and seeing each other. Yeah, you know, yeah. I've had a friend that says, you know, you don't really know someone until you get their stink on you.
So, yes, Willie, let's get our stink on each other.
So I wanted to go into a little bit more about what his life was actually like when he was living out in the woods. But one of the most captivating things of the story was he never even built a fire in the 27 years he was living out in the woods of Maine in the winter.
Okay, so for those of you who know your geography, you know, Maine, you think of sometimes as the Great North Woods. The northern half of Maine is a very wild and remote place. Chris Knight, the hermit who lived outside for 27 years, did not live in the North Woods. Chris Knight actually lived in a rural sort of suburban part of central Maine. It was only a few minutes hike through the woods to get to the nearest cabin. He lived in this lake country of central Maine. He lived in a camping tent, which he stole. He had this, I found his campsite. He wandered around in the woods of Maine for maybe the first year to 2 years of his 27 years out there. And then for the last quarter century, he lived in the same campsite. And it's one of the most magnificent places I've ever been. It's like this room carved out of this forest, which is so thick. It's like a Brillo pad thick. And deer don't even go through there, so no hunters or hikers or bird watchers really ever came across his site. And it was sort of surrounded by this natural Stonehenge of boulders, and you sort of twisted your body between these two large rocks, and you entered this room. You know, I call it a room, but it's just like this opening in this dense forest from which you can't see very much, because imagine like walls made out of like tangled trees and bushes, but you can hear the whole forest. There's even a roof overhead, which is basically interlinked tree branches. And this is where he lived for 25 years and was able to move through the forest with extraordinary skill. Now, winters in Maine are not just cold, they are also long and really wet. I lived in most of my life in Montana, which is very cold, but it's a dry cold, very different. It is very, I would have trouble. I'm a kind of an outdoorsman, not compared to Chris Knight. I could not last a night, let alone a week in winter without a fire. I would light a fire every night. It's the thing, I mean, cavemen lit a fire. It's like one of our natural things. He was afraid, correctly, by the way, that smoke would give his campsite away. He did not want to light a fire. And everything I'm telling you, by the way, is true. I went to his site 5 times. I just wanted to find one piece of charred wood to overturn his story. I never found a shred of evidence that refuted any of his story. And I interviewed the police and had access to all the legal records. Yeah, he never lit a fire. He would sometimes hang out in this small room in the woods for 6 months without leaving, because he didn't want to even leave a footprint. And in the snow, it's impossible to walk through without leaving footprints. But when even in the mud season, he would hop from like rocks and roots and move through the forest, sort of like this. I sort of envision this like kind of a work of art, dance through the forest, where he would twist and move through these very thick woods without breaking branches or making very much noise, and lived completely by himself. I asked him how often he talked to himself, because I spent the night 5 times there at his site, which is only 9,995 days less than Chris Knight. And I talked to myself. I just start babbling to myself when I'm alone after like a couple of hours. Ah, Mike, should we have a sandwich now? Maybe we should take, you know, I just like to hear, you know, I'm a normal social person. I like my alone time. I'm a writer, but I also like to socialize. And when I had no one else, I socialized with myself. Chris Knight said he never, he said that was absurd. Why would he ever speak out loud? He insisted he never spoke once out loud. He never took notes. He never kept a notebook. He never snapped a photo. He obviously never went on the internet. So there were no, he didn't have a Facebook page or an Instagram account. He lived absolutely alone, no fire, sometimes nearly freezing to death, sometimes nearly starving. But here is where my point is, and I'm sorry for babbling so much.
Oh, it's okay. It's a compelling story.
Loved it. He loved his time in the woods. This is the thing I think that makes the whole story sort of break in an unusual situation. When I asked him how he felt about it, he expressed such joy about his life. He did not come out, I would like to tell your listeners, he did not come out of the woods voluntarily. He was arrested while stealing some hamburger meat and pasta at a summer camp that was closed for the season. He was said to me that he liked his life so much and expressed more contentment. We've talked about how society is driving everyone crazy. This man expressed more contentment with his very unusual life choices than most people I meet out in the world that contains the rest of us. And he said he planned to die out there in the woods. And the irony of the whole book is that, and sometimes people come up and ask me, you know, wouldn't this have been a better book if it had never been written? And I sometimes say to them, and they say to me, you know, would this be a better book if it had never been written? And I say, absolutely, it would have been much better if it never been written. Like, I mean, there's really no good answer to that. But there is a sort of like irony that by him being captured and telling his story, it does ruin it a little bit. And I find some sort of like melancholy satisfaction, to put two odd words together, in the fact that this story is sort of hard. I'm not really selling my book for it. The story is sort of ruined by telling it. It was supposed to be this pure thing, this beautiful object. His life was going to be this hidden thing. He was going to be the only person in the world that lived completely anonymously. And he failed to do that. And I wrote about him, and it sort of ruins the whole beauty of it. But that's sort of weirdly the point. And like some of the most wonderful books I've read are sort of sad.
Yeah, this was definitely a sad book. You know, the first few chapters, you know, I would say it's more just pulling you in and getting you to really like this guy. And then it just really does become a sad story. And, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say I felt good after reading it, but I was glad I read it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the general point of the book, I think a good book, and I won't, you have to decide if it's good or not, but a good book is one that you sort of close and then you sort of think about your own life or your own choices, or it has this sort of echo. And I think the general question of the book isn't about, it's not really, it's a book about a guy who spent 27 years alone, but I think one of the questions the book asks is, what do you do with someone that doesn't really fit into the world? And if you're a true criminal, like a murderer, well, then we have prisons for you. But that didn't, Chris Knight wasn't that. And if you're really, really mentally insane, then we have hospitals for you and doctors for you. But he wasn't that category either. He just didn't sort of fit in with the rest of us. And the answer was, we just don't have a spot for people like him. We don't have a spot for you. We don't know what to do with people that don't fit in with the rest of us. And he tried his hardest to find his own little spot in the world. And it lasted for quite a long time. But eventually, reality, whatever that means, caught up with him. And so there is a little vein of melancholy. But I feel like, you know, I don't know. There was something about the whole story. I think I'm spoiled as a journalist. I get to write about what grabs me by the heart the strongest. And something about this whole story. In the first week, we started our relationship, Chris Knight, Hermit, and I, by writing letters to each other the old-fashioned way, pen and paper and envelopes and stamps, those whole things. And just the way he wrote to me was this, you know, when you write personal letters to each other, which are so rare these days, it really resonates. And just even from the first couple of paragraphs of his first letter, it was something, there was something that drew me in. Like we mentioned, his intelligence, his insights, and his sort of really bone dry sense of humor.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned earlier that you do put a lot of yourself in your books. Like, you are not just a outside of the story telling it. You are very in the books, which, you know, made me wonder, do you consider yourself an introvert? I know as a journalist, and I'm really asking this for myself too, because I have the worst social anxiety, yet somehow part of what I do for a living is talk to people. Does that resonate with you, that you consider yourself a bit of an introvert?
That's funny because when I was, you know, I actually asked myself that same question because I often talk to strangers for a living. I sometimes give talks in front of hundreds of people, and yet my job is often to shut myself in a room all by myself. But then I have three kids, and I was like, I wonder, and I found a new term which actually exists called ambivert, which is a person that loves to be alone but also loves to be in company from time to time. So I am 100% ambivert, meaning that if I don't have my alone time, I'm going to lose my mind. But if I have too much alone time, I need to surround myself with my friends. I need both. There's some people that are total extroverts that just need to be surrounded with people all the time. There's people like Chris Knight that are total introverts. But there's people that really, and an ambivert doesn't mean like, you know, you go from one to the other. You actually really need both. I need my friends and my family around me, and I really need my alone time. Ambivert. Good word to know.
Word of the day is ambivert, and I'm going to ask my therapist if I might be an ambivert next time I speak to him. I know we're running out of time. You have to go pick your kids up soon. But the one final question I wanted to talk about was people's reactions to, you know, hearing the story of Chris Knight. You know, you got the people that almost idolize him and what a champion and how brave. And then people that seemed almost to hate him because, oh, well, he was stealing things. He wasn't fitting in with society. And I've always kind of said, society as a whole, you know, we root, like if you're watching Les Mis, we root for Valjean, but then we always turn around and act like Javert in our society. So, you know, it just, there's some very interesting, you know, do you think that people's reactions actually say a lot about who they are as a person and commentary on society?
Yeah, I touched on that earlier, and it's funny that you mentioned Les Mis. I mean, you know, here I am in France, and Victor Hugo actually, I think, wrote that in right here in Aix-en-Provence. Actually, my daughter goes, it's funny, for, you know, sometimes living in Europe, you know, things are like so old. My daughter goes to the same school that Victor Hugo went to, so it's like.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's only been a school for 450 years, so it's, you know, it's a new one. As a journalist, I really enjoy like listening to all opinions. But in this story, one of the things one of the many things that really gripped me was this sort of varied reaction to Chris Knight. Just briefly, as I mentioned, he didn't live in the wilds of Maine. He lived in this sort of suburban lake area of central Maine. More rural than suburban, but broke into many cabins, never full-time homes, what they call camps, these like sort of summer homes that are usually shut down for the winter. And he would never kick down a door or smash a window. He was able to pick locks or carefully undo the hasp on a window and open it up. He would crawl into your cabin. He wouldn't touch your computer, your jewelry, your television, your anything like that. He would take flashlights. He would take some food. He would take a couple of Stephen King novels or your books. And then when he would leave it, he would make sure he would shut the window and lock the hasp. And if he went out through the front door, he would lock it behind him and leave the cabin, you know, sealed up. He didn't want real thieves to come in. And so there's this sort of almost, you know, Robin Hood-ish feel here. And some people's reactions were like, listen, you know, after the second time someone broke into my cabin and I saw what was gone, which was, you know, a couple of batteries and my hamburger meat, I understood intuitively that this guy was gentle. And there were other people, it's like, listen, man, it's not the hamburger meat or the batteries he took. He took my peace of mind, my sense of security. There was no way for me to know that this guy wasn't armed. There was no way for me to know that this guy wasn't crazy. I have children sleeping up in the loft. You know, I worked hard at a job to be able to buy a summer home, and he took my peace of mind. And when someone says that to you, you're like, I agree with you. She's like, he could have knocked on my door and asked for anything, and I would have just given it to him. You don't break into my house like that. And there were other people like, clearly, you know, this guy stole my, you know, some sugar and, you know, this thing. And, there, you know, one guy's like, you know, he stole my backpack once, and I freaked out because that's where I stored my passport and my wife's passport. And he was like completely freaked out. Then he opened the cabinet and he saw that the hermit had taken out the two passports and left them behind. And he's like, after that, I just knew that this wasn't going to be any sort of problem. And this spectrum from absolute sort of almost not only respect, but almost jealousy to absolute hatred. And when people were telling me their individual reactions, I found myself nodding to almost everyone. And, you know, you mentioned at the outset that this show is political, but there was something about like Knight's reaction tonight that like made me sort of see this whole spectrum, you know, and I didn't have my house broken into, so I don't know how I would react, but I found that this sort of range of human reactions to the same incident, the same guy doing the same thing, having so many different reactions says a lot about, you know, society for good and for bad. Anyway, that's my long spiel about, you know, an interesting case.
No, I definitely think it's very interesting, and it definitely reminds me of different people. Like, I've always said, if somebody breaks into my house when I'm there and they're nonviolent, I'm just like, take whatever you want. I have insurance. Like, right. You know, and I'm also, you know, being a little more on the leftist socialist side of, you know, from according to their ability, to each according to their need. And this guy needed it. And, you know, there's discussions about personal property and whatnot, but you know, and someone who was just trying to survive.
Right, but not to play devil's advocate, but why couldn't he just knock on the door and ask, you know, instead of breaking in? And so, like I said, it's hard for, like, I feel warmly about Chris Knight and I speak warmly about him, but I liked in my efforts to in the book was to just lay out all the facts as unbiased as possible and allow the reader to decide for herself or himself how they feel about him. And I think that's the sign of if I did pull it off successfully, that's the sign of an engaging a story where you get to make your own decisions about how you feel about the story.
Yeah, that is completely what, I mean, my actual day job, this is just a part-time thing I'm doing with a partner, but my day job is I'm an artist and I create art for a living. So there's a lot of, like, people tell me things that they see in my art and I'm just like, well, that's not where I was going, but, you know, I'm glad
but
it's
they're not wrong, you know, and I think, like, you know, an art can be anything from a poem to a painting to a sculpture. It's like, if many people are reacting to it, then that is something beautiful unto itself. And I think this is the type of story that just, you know, I've been a journalist. I'm kind of getting old. I've been a journalist for close to 30 years. And I don't know if I've learned that much in my life, but I sort of have a sense for what's a story that's worth telling. And I feel like the story of Chris Knight is something that's, whether you react angrily or you weep or you sort of cheer, like, it's sort of one of those stories that is worth hearing.
Yeah, I totally recommend anyone go out and get this book. I'm sure you can get it anywhere. There's books that are sold, even though, you know, Amazon's kind of an evil empire. I know it's on Amazon. local bookstores, I'm assuming if you have a local community bookstore, go buy it there.
My preference also. It's called The Stranger in the Woods. And, you know, my advice is maybe open it up, read the first couple of paragraphs. If you don't like it, put it back down and go check another book out. There's a lot of them. But if it does grip you, maybe consider giving it a read.
Yeah, like I said, I read it from start to finish in one day. Like, I opened it up in the morning and I sat it down at the end of the night, you know, when I was done with it. So,
well, bless
you,
Heather. I'm going to start a little Heather shrine in the corner of my office here.
I like that. Just make sure to send me pictures of it.
Rose petals and flat and water and maybe some offerings each day.
A little hammer and sickle over in the corner. Well, thank you so much for being here. Do you have anything you want to plug before we wrap up?
Or I just plugged the heck out of my book. And so, no, I don't want to plug anything. I just, like I said, in this day and age, it's sort of, you know, in my ambivertness, I welcome responses from people. My name is Mike Finkel, but my author name is Michael Finkel. You can catch me at www.michaelfinkel.com. And if you read the book and you have a comment, positive or negative, you can send me a note through my contact, and guess what? I will, no matter what, no matter how evil or beautiful, I will respond to you.
And he's telling the truth. Like, I just reached out to him on Twitter and was like, hey, want to come on my show? And we set it up, you know? So
it wasn't too bad. I'm, you know, I feel like I survived okay the
No, it's been a great time having you here. I'm so glad you decided to come on the show.
Thank you, Heather.
Listeners, you know, please go and check out his book. You really will like it. Go check out his first book too. And if you guys like what you're hearing here on New Jersey Revolution Radio, you know, this is just me and my friend, my partner that started this up. We need your help. If you like independent media from an anti-capitalist voice, the stories that you're not hearing covered, hearing about amazing activists that inspire you, then, you know, we need a little help with the finances. We don't take any corporate money. So go on to NJ Revolution Radio, click on that donate button. We have a Patreon. You can follow us. Like us and follow us is also important. We're on pretty much everything now. We haven't quite gotten approved for iTunes yet, but we're on Stitcher, SoundCloud, pretty much everything except iTunes at this point. So follow us, like us, chip in what you can, even if it's only a couple of bucks a month. We really appreciate it. Thank you guys for joining us. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.